Now, whilst Brenda is on her holliers down in Johnstown in County Kildare, Blonnet is filling in. So you've been out reporting out and about, so to speak, like Mary Kennedy on Nationwide.
Out and about, Derek.
So where did you go?
It's all a bit new to me. I went to Connemara.
Oh, yeah. You were probably on holidays in Connemara.
Yeah, I was.
What did you do when you were on holidays in Connemara?
Okay, I went lobster fishing, right? This part of Connemara on Chlawar, which is beside Ballinahound, and Connemara is where my mother's family are from originally. And as children, we always holidayed there.
Now, hang on a second, Blonnet. Are we going to have to put subtitles on the radio?
No, why? Because of the Gaeilge.
Yeah, I'm just wondering.
Oh, no, we're not. There's a little bit there, but I directly translate as we go along.
Great.
But you see, Derek, for me, it's really unnatural to speak English to these people.
To other people who speak Irish as a first language.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So I do kind of explain as I go.
Because I've heard it said in the past by some people who speak Irish that it's unnatural to speak English.
It is unnatural.
Is it?
It is. I'll start again. I'll rephrase it. It is natural, of course, for me to speak English now that I'm 43. But as a child, it was very unnatural, and it's something that.
So, until
really,
what age did you start speaking English?
Battled fluently on a daily basis. It wasn't until I came to Dublin when I was 15. Really.
Are you serious?
Yeah, because
everything was through Irish.
My immediate family was. If I went into the local towns, it wasn't Athboy, Trim, or Navan. But up to then, it was all Oscailge. Yeah.
All right. So back to Connemara.
Here we are, back in Connemara. And the last few visits, I managed to go out lobster fishing with my cousins. Now they're not really my first cousins; they're cousins of cousins of cousins. You know. Anyway, we're all related in that part of Connemara. So we headed out for the day. Myself, my husband Kieran, and the two younger boys, Cole and Darragh, because the older two will not holiday with us anymore. They just won't. They're just too cool for school. So we drove to Rosseville, which is a hive of activity with boat ferries coming in and out all the tours to the Aran Islands. So have a listen.
Well, it depends where the pots are, really. And
are they all attached to
they
each other?
Are, yeah, yeah, they are. They're slings. You call them slings, you know. They're 10 pots or 20 pots. Or you can put a few others on if you want.
And how many could you have?
Depends, really. Yeah. Depends what you're fishing for. If you're fishing for crabs, no, you put a lot on it. You know.
And how many do you have?
We have around 400 pots.
Okay. Yeah. Now, I'm very curious. You don't go out. Do you go out every week? Once a week or a fortnight? Or how does it work?
Well, really, once a week. Depends on the weather, really.
Weather...
If it's foggy or windy, you won't go out because you can't go out, really.
Yeah, it's too dangerous.
No. Yeah, it's too dangerous, yeah.
And the skill that you have, you're only a young man, but did you learn this or...?
Well... I learned a lot from my uncles. I fished for them for a few years and I did a course up in Greencastle. And, it's local knowledge, really.
Yeah, local knowledge, yeah. And I suppose local knowledge, knowing the shape of the coastline as well.
Where
knowing
the rocks,
where you're going.
Where the rocks are and where the...
But we just left Rosseville now. We have to go a good bit out, don't we?
Yeah, we have our pots around a mile.
Mile out. And how many local men like you, young men, would be doing this?
Well, there's not much now. There's a lot of people going to Australia, Canada, and things like that.
But you're still here.
Yeah, I'm still here.
Ah, far. That's how mean the other fellow I'm just saying to Pádraig, it's so unnatural to be speaking English to Pádraig, because of course we'd speak Irish to each other. But anyway, we're all laughing here on the boat. So anyway, Pádraig's uncle is driving the boat. We're on our way out. I have my two kids with me and Pádraig's dad as well, Colleen. And we also have a neighbour. So we're heading out now. It is very, very, very foggy.
But again, local knowledge, life jackets are on, so we're all being very, very careful, of course. What are you doing there, pouring now?
Well, we put the rope on the pothole.
We're going to be down there.
We're going to pull this thing up.
Oh, here we go, here we go. Bring the lads. Ishapora, Kitashin Chin, what do you have there?
We have crabs and spider crab.
Oh, here we go. We have another one here now. Oh, I think Farik. Lobster. Is that a good size or a bad, a small size?
I think that's a small size now.
And will you put it back?
Yeah, we'll throw them back.
What are you doing here now?
We'll try the gauge on, just for to see what size.
Okay.
Yeah, that's in size now.
That's in size?
Yeah.
Okay.
It measured to the eyes to where the tail starts.
Okay, and that's how you gauge it. So do you keep that or throw it back in?
We'll keep that one.
We'll keep that one. All right, okay. The island ferries are passing us by. All the tourists coming from the Aran Islands are waving at them. They'll probably pay a fortune to do what we're doing. They're just making the point, like it's a dirty job and it's a wet job. You could be out all day, you need to be strong, and yet you don't necessarily get much out of it. You just said you won't be a millionaire. No. The storage pot, or putatashk in Irish, where you keep the lobsters. Where you keep all the lobsters until you're ready to give them to the French guy up the road.
Yeah. Well, we have a massive pot for them, all right.
And how many would you have?
Store four boxes in it.
The whole idea is that you have to deliver them fresh.
Well, they have to be alive.
Still alive, yeah.
They have
There's
to
no
be still alive, because
dead.
If they're half dead, you won't take it. So you have to keep them alive.
Yeah,
then.
So you're only going a mile up the road and deliver them.
Yeah,
that's handy.
It's handy.
And of course, you're very lucky because you're only up the road, and when you're ready for your dinner's ready. Well, I'm happy. I'm getting two lobsters to go to go home with.
Is there not too much noise for you here?
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm here with Loic in the little French factory you have going on here, just a few miles from Russellville. Loic, tell me, how long have you been in Connemara?
We have been here for 38 years now.
Wow.
And we loved every minute of it.
And tell me, what brought you here first, apart from the beautiful scenery?
It's my father that fell in love with the country. He loved fishing and shooting. So that was his dream, to come on holidays here. He used to come here on holidays on a regular basis. And he decided to come and live here permanently.
And set up your own business here.
Yeah, but that wasn't the main reason. The main reason was the quality of life here. And obviously he had to get a business too. But the business, worked pretty well at the end. But it was hard work at the beginning.
Now, in these huge tanks over here, if you don't mind, we'll have a walk over. There are so many lobsters, but I've noticed a few blue ones, bright blue on the other side. Is that unusual?
It would be. It would be quite unusual. But when you think that we go through every week through thousands and thousands of lobsters, so for us, we could see some funny colours. We could see one or two every year. You know?
And what kind of funny colours have you seen?
We've got some white ones, red ones. Some light blue, some mixed colors, so it's...
Does the color add to the flavor?
We don't sell them, so I don't know about the flavor. We normally donate them to the aquarium in Galway. I think, in all fairness, there was a need for a buyer here of shellfish, because when you think that a lot of the shellfish were thrown back into the sea, it was a real disgrace. So when we moved in, like I said, nearly 40 years ago, we started buying species that nobody else was buying. The shrimp business, for instance, there was nobody fishing shrimps in this part of the world.
Do you not find that fascinating as a Frenchman that, that they were being thrown back in the sea, that the market wasn't obvious to the local Connemara fishermen? And coming from the Midlands, I know when I came here on holidays,
the highlight was getting your hands on shellfish.
I must admit I found that a bit crazy, you know, but that changed rapidly, you know, I must say now, basically anything that comes out of the sea, we can buy and process and export. So it's a win-win situation for everybody, you know.
My cousin Porik and the locals, I know they keep them all together, the lobsters, in the sort of in the storage pot.
They keep, yeah.
Until you're ready to go on your big truck.
Yes.
And how often do you head off to France? And where in France are you going?
We go twice a week. We go to France, to Brittany mostly. And the second lorry goes to Spain, mostly to the Basque country. So it's all Celtic, if you think about it, you know.
Of course. And how quickly would his lobster be on a plate in Spain?
Well, it wouldn't take long. Brittany within 24 hours sometimes, and Spain within 48 hours. So we don't waste time.
Tell me, the taste of Irish lobster,
yes,
in comparison to French lobster, Spanish lobster, is there a bigger appeal for Irish lobster?
It's funny you mentioned that point, because most of the Irish lobsters are sold in France as Brittany lobsters, would you believe it or not? So, in all fairness, there's very little difference between the two products.
So,
they are just as good.
Sorry, the Irish lobster is sold in France as Brittany lobster?
Yes.
Oh.
Because the Brittany lobster in France is considered the best in the country. So, on the most famous tables in Paris, when you see a lobster, it has to be coming from Brittany. But it could be Irish, it could be Scottish, it could be... It's irrelevant. The taste is just as good.
When you eat lobster yourself, do you like dressing? Do you like to make the sauce? Or do you like to eat it the way it is?
My two favorite ways would be the boiled lobster with homemade mayonnaise, and that I make myself. And then my wife would make the other one, which is a bottled lobster with a little bit of brandy, flambé at the end. And that's pretty delicious as well.
And needless to say, you and you, is it your brother that runs the company with you?
My brother runs the frozen section, the processing section.
And you both married local?
Yes, yeah, both Irish Connemara women, and we are delighted.
Coramila Mahagat, merci beaucoup.
De rien.
I would be very annoyed if I was in Brittany listening to this, and we have listeners all over Europe, Blanet.
I know, Derek.
And they're thinking they're eating Brittany lobster and they're eating Connemara lobster.
But I'm sure they're eating Brittany lobster too. It's all in the one.
Seems a bit odd. But anyway, so you have your two lobsters.
I have me too, and I'm delighted. And they're huge. And in fairness to Paul...
You still have them at home?
No, I've eaten them since.
What did you do with them?
Well, I'll tell you now in a minute. After I had to, then I had to go and get the best of advice on how to cook them and everything else. Now, it all sounds pretty brutal to some people and inhumane and everything, but I went off all the way into Galway to find a wonderful chef called JP McMahon, who's a chef in the Anir restaurant. Now, I warn you and I warn the listeners, this is a little squeamish, and of those of you of a delicate disposition, brace yourself or close your ears if you can do such a thing, because JP is a man's man, Derek, and approaches his work in the style of a true hunter-gatherer.
There's a lot of, I suppose, debate about humane ways to kill lobsters. I mean, some people just like to throw them into a pot of boiling water. With regard to feeling and the size of the lobster's brain, I don't know if it's much of a muchness. But people who like to do it humane way, put the knife down through his head, okay? So, like, this is a little X. It's almost like Mother Nature just set us up for this little X here. So there's a little, just at the point of his cranium, you just put the knife in there, okay? Now he's foaming at the mouth at the moment. And then you're going to bang it down. So I'll just move that microphone there for a second. Okay. So, and then you're going to put the knife right through his head. And then just let him relax for a moment. Because he'll, but he's dead now.
Okay, what's all that goo coming out?
That's, liquid, I suppose. Anyone who got a knife in the head would probably lose a bit of fluid. But
come here, there's some people listening to this now at the moment going, oh my God, this is barbaric.
I always say, if the lobster got you, he wouldn't be thinking too much about you. And the reason why we have his claws wrapped up is that if he got you in your hand, you'd nearly have to take his arm off before he let you go. Now, you can take his arm off quite easily. We have him there. He's gone. Now, he might still jump up and down a bit in the water, but that's just a reflex, like he is dead. So we're just going to pop him in, okay?
And this is bubbling, boiling water.
Yeah. And at some places, I can tell you, for aesthetic purposes, they like to put, when he's alive, they like to put a skewer up his tail to keep the tail straight. So a lot of, say, Michelin-star restaurants, they want a straight tail. So they skewer the lobster when he's alive So possibly that mightn't be the most humane thing in the world.
No, but that's presentation.
That's presentation. And we have our timer on anyway. But time, you can see me's going red now anyway.
Now, the squealing sound, we can't hear it.
No, there's no real squealing sound. I mean, if you threw them in, you get a few bubbles, but like squealing lobsters, no, I don't. Crayfish squeal, absolutely, yeah, that is true.
And is that a squeal like a squeal I'm dying or just a squeal of air?
It's a kind of
the air trapped in the shell and the air just gets out and makes that noise, that's all.
Introduce your colleague here.
Oh, this is Shimon, one of our chefs here in Cal.
They don't have vocal cords or anything, so they're not really screaming or anything like that.
If someone dropped you into a pot of boiling water, they wouldn't know if you were screaming or not, because you'd be under the water.
Now, what do you think of the other way of doing it, is putting them into the freezer first?
Like, I don't think it's any more humane, because he's going to die from the cold. And they say, well, he'll fall asleep, but he'll die from the cold as opposed from the hot. So it's much of a muchness.
Oh, here we go.
So you can see that, like, there's a nice translucency to the tail. So that's what you want. You want it to kind of look raw, okay? Now, so you want to take the claws off. Now, we'll have to get a hammer, if I have a hammer. Bart, have you a scissors?
Yeah.
Oh, here, I have one here. Oh, yeah, give us that other scissors. Hi. There you go. Shimon's. Well, mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. So. Whew. So if you can get a scissors and just cut through the tail.
Oh, lovely. Looks gorgeous, doesn't it?
Oh, there you go. If you taste it, it's so, like, we haven't even seasoned that. And if you taste it, it's so sweet. And I think there's nothing worse when you get overcooked lobster. Oh. Yeah, you always get kind of like splattered in the face now when you're opening lobsters.
So what would you say to those people at home who can't stand the squeal, who have a fear that they are killing? I mean, at the end of the day, it's no point denying.
I'd say you have to eat to survive, and things have to die for you to survive. So I think that's just part of life. And I hate to break the heart of all the vegetarians. We have to kill the vegetables as well when we pick them from the ground. So we cannot get through this life without killing things. And that's just a fact of life.
Well, JP Anne O'Sullivan has been on to say it's disgusting. Plenty of food to eat without torturing lobster and crayfish. Is it cruel, Blondie?
Well, I had to go and ask an expert, and I know that you love experts on this programme, so I went and asked MacDaro Cuig, marine biologist.
JP, a wonderful chef from Galway City, he stuck a knife into sort of the... Is it just above the eyes there? He kind of stuck a knife into it and then put it into boiling water. Now, it didn't make a sound, but in my childhood... It made a kind of sheen, a little squealy sound.
Yeah, that sheen and the squeal that you talk about could be just the excess gases coming out through the actual... you have to think of the lobster. Its bones, the shell, is on the outside. So its skin and flesh is on the inside.
Oh, so it's the complete opposite to us.
A complete opposite. It's like he's a knight in shining armour, or a knight in shelly armour.
Okay.
Right.
Okay.
So the gases sometimes get out through that.
That's not him or her screaming.
No, they're more akin to insects, really, and even in the way that they developed the nervous system. It's kind of like a ganglion system, which is segmented. And even sometimes, if you see kind of twitching and stuff, that could be just the ganglion sending a signal to the muscle. Now, but the thing is, what your chef did, where he put a spike or a knife through the crown, just makes sure that there's no agony whatsoever. There wouldn't be anyways, but that reduces it. Also, what you can do is you can put your lobster into the fridge or freezer for a while.
Okay, but he said about that, you're just doing the same thing, really. He said you're
exactly.
Just putting it asleep. And at the end of the day, quick way of dealing. I mean, we kill so many things we eat anyway. So.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the thing is, if you're not willing to kill them, you shouldn't be willing to eat them in a way.
That's true. That's true.
But the other thing as well, that you may remember in your childhood, you always have to make sure that the pot is boiling.
Oh, fuck up.
Bubbling. Bubbling. And then you drop them in.